Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I got my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr., and we got our good friends, Abby Langer and Amanda Thieb. I say that because I was asking how to say her last name before. Anyway, quickly, Abby, quickly introduce yourself. She has an awesome Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, I'm sure, where she basically demystifies some of these diets out there that just, I don't even know where she finds some of these diets. They must be popular in some circles. And then like,
people send them to me. People,
some far reaching circles of the world.
Awful. Yeah. So what's your deal, Abby?
I am a registered dietitian. I've been a dietitian for 23 years. I'm based in Toronto and I am the owner of Abby Langer Nutrition.
Cool. Okay. Amanda, your turn.
Hey, I'm Amanda Thieb. I'm also in Toronto. Abby and I hang out together. Ah. I didn't know that. Hey, but I'm English. And apparently my accent's way thicker than Spencer was expecting.
And we like thick.
Yeah. I like thick as well. Thick and juicy. And so, and
so every episode I get fired, and I already got fired.
We're only 1 minute awesome. In. All right.
Good. Yep. Good. New record. All right.
Anyway, I'm just here. I'm a trainer. I'm a personal trainer and nutrition coach, like 30 years in this because I'm old. And then I wrote a book all about menopause as well.
Well, I was going to say she does an awesome job at menopause, like a patient, very good patient advocate about menopause because there's so many people, including like 20-year-old dudes talking about menopause and what they think about it. It's like, oh my God.
The 20-year-old fitness guys that try to tell...
How about Jade Tita?
there's probably lawyers involved now.
Jade already is. Yeah, she's already mad at me. So a little background about the four of us is just for people. We have a little text string on Instagram, and it's called Quack Watch. And you know, we all have our little moments where we point out quackery out there to try to raise public awareness. So. You know, you guys are often sending messages, and I'm sorry, I'm not always on Instagram, so I don't get them till like 4 hours later. And Spencer, you guys are like, where the heck is Carl?
No, 4 days. It's 4 days, and we're all sat there waiting for Carl's answer.
Where the hell did he go?
But it's kind of fun, and I love, pointing out the red flags of quackery to try to raise awareness. And it often, makes people mad because so many people are sucked into this, and so many people are trying to, sort of sell and market quackery, whether it's always on purpose or not, but it sure isn't right, and you guys do the same. So I think it's great that we have this little teamwork going and we all have sort of different niches where this comes into play.
Okay, let's just stop there. It's called niche.
Niche.
It's not a niche.
A niche.
Niche like bitch on niche. Like, it's a niche.
A niche. It's like a niche. Quiche?
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't mind eating a quiche.
What about riches are in the niches?
I don't even know what that means, but somehow I feel like that got me
riches.
I feel like that was an innuendo, but I do like that group, and I like it because I'm the patient advocate, and Abby's like the nutritional expert. You guys are the medical experts, and so we're always like picking each other's brains. But usually, my contribution is I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. Contribution is. Oh my dear.
There's a lot of profanity.
Look what we found.
There's a lot of profanity. Yeah. But we help each other out, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we want to do this podcast. We're going to go over, we've done some of this stuff in the past, but we kind of go over what are these red flags? Because it's nonstop. It's whack-a-mole on Instagram, TikTok. I don't know. TikTok might be the worst now,
TikTok's such a cesspool.
We had a good episode with Hormones Demystify talking about some of those popular endocrine things. So he's an endocrinologist like I am, and has made his niche in educating people about hormones from a patient perspective and kind of going against some of the quackery. But the quackery goes way beyond just some thyroid and adrenal fatigue, which certainly we could talk all day about. But there are so many more that you guys find and we talk about, and, you know, Dutch hormone testing. I think maybe we did touch on that a little bit, but
Abby wrote an article about that.
Yeah. And the Dutch people contacted me.
Yeah, I think I even, I discussed
and they wanted me to change my article.
No,
thankfully not. I have had that before, unfortunately, from somebody else. But the Dutch people were like, you wrote this article and it's wrong, and here's some information. I sent it to you, Casey. I sent it to you.
And it was all like, it was not legitimate. We know, you know, from a medical perspective, we use data, good data, to be able to validate testing for certain conditions with pretest probabilities of having those disease states. And it has none of
that. And it's
the Dutch test, if anybody's ever heard
of it. They wanted, the crazy thing is, they were like, why don't you come on our podcast? And I'm like, why in the world? What? I'm not coming on your podcast. What? That would be crazy. So I was like, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And I just stopped talking to them. But they really wanted me to change my outlook. And I'm like, I'm not changing my outlook with the evidence you provided me. No.
And I know it from the other side as well. So I know it from the health coach side, how they get approached and how they get paid and how they get pushed to do this. So it's like a weekend course you can do training. And somebody like me with my education, apparently I'm good enough to be able to analyze hormones and then give like hormonal advice based on this Dutch test. It's crazy. And the latest, and I mean, you know, menopause is a multi-billion dollar industry now, and it's heavily targeted towards menopausal women, and their line now is as per the North American Menopause Society, and that's BS, because what happened is at their last North American Menopause Society convention, they paid to have a booth there.
Really?
You know, like how and so it wasn't approved and so they now are almost using that like legitimacy.
They actually had a booth at the conference. And then they...
Yeah, what do they call it, guys? You guys, when you go to...
It's an exhibition hall.
So they have a booth at the expo, and they're taking that as approval from the North American Menopause... That's what they're doing?
Well, they word it as in, as per what? The North American Menopause Society, but they paid for that,
right? I'd be amazed if the North American Menopause... Because they're a legitimate, you know, professional organization. I wonder if they even know that that's happening.
Did someone tell them?
I don't know, but they don't.
So for anybody listening, what the hell is a Dutch test? What is it? Is it the urine?
Yeah, metabolites. Urine metabolite testing that is given. It's like
Urine metabolites.
Doesn't tell you anything that normal blood tests can.
Yeah, and the basics of what they're trying to do is they're trying to claim, you know, all these different ways to diagnose kind of unreal hormone disorders, which, you know, we have from an endocrinology perspective, fairly good validated methods to diagnose hypothalamic, pituitary, thyroid, adrenal disorders, which is kind of what they're trying to claim. But I don't even know if they even try to claim that they're diagnosing some disease state. They're just getting people to pay for it and then use it to, you know, somehow.
Well, imagine me analyzing someone's hormones. That's essentially what they're doing. And they get a massive kickback. It's $800 for the test. They get a massive kickback. And then people like you are the ones that have to pick up the pieces when these women for years and years get invalid test results.
Holy
right?
Cow. Yeah. It's shocking. All right. So let's get into it. I want to talk about first, let's go to Abby with what are the big red flags when it comes to like nutrition and diet, when it's like, whoa. Of course, I think obviously if somebody has their shirt off in a shopping center, I think that's probably a big red flag.
It's so bad.
To be fair, there is a decent chance that you and I probably thought about doing
you
that.
You thought about it. But
thought about
no.
it.
No. You're not some leathery
we
guy.
We wouldn't have been able to keep a straight face. We would have been able to keep a straight face.
No, we would have been
dancing pecs.
Yes, we would have been bouncing our pecs. Yeah,
pecs and our lats.
And maybe we
I do that all the time.
Actually, that might not be a bad idea to make fun of that.
Yeah,
anyway, sorry.
Should,
sorry.
But you get kicked out.
So what are your top like five? Yeah, what are your top five red flags when it comes to nutrition? Because you've done tons of blogs, hundreds. I swear to God, hundreds of articles, hundreds of videos on these. What are the top five? Top three.
Making nutrition all about one thing, one food, single food, and that you know, you can't be healthy unless you eat this food. And it's invariably something that's super expensive. Telling people not to mm-hmm. eat staple foods that we've been eating for centuries and are totally, you know, fine, like chickpeas or lentils or cereals or grains
seed oils,
like all of that, that's hyper focus on
tomatoes,
nightshades, lactins. That's like who's everything.
That's all Tom Brady's fault. And it's such an asshole.
You know what? Like it's
can we tag him in this now and see if he comes to hang out with us?
He's the goat. He'll always be the goat. We'll get him on the podcast.
Yeah, you know,
Abby can call him an asshole.
I'll call him an asshole. I don't care. And you know, like trying to sell supplements, like when I always think it's a red flag when a practitioner sells their own supplements. I just think, what are you doing? Like that is mm-hmm. a call.
Yeah, we owned our own supplement company. Did you know that?
This is exactly why we stopped.
We stopped.
And why we don't do it anymore, because we felt like we had a very reasonable, evidence-based, legit consideration for something for metabolic health that really has good data behind it, but we couldn't and wouldn't we couldn't market it in the way that the quacks do, and so we couldn't compete, and for the exact reason you just said, there's this conflict of interest, and we couldn't balance the two things, being legitimate and the conflict. And so
focusing on one like nutrient or food to eat and then focus
either good or bad
or demonizing
good or demonizing or
foods. Okay, that's good. And then also selling supplements. And what else? Was there one other that you said?
Just like vilifying, demonizing, and just like making these elitist proclamations, like, you know, grass-fed butter, you have to eat organic, you have to eat, you know, whatever, pastured eggs, you won't be healthy. It's like, well, the rest of us just screwed.
Extremism.
Extremism, cutting out entire food groups. Oh, it was the lectins,
lectins.
Like, that's right. That's the like, silly.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Yeah.
And that's, it's always somehow extraordinary and extreme.
The issue is, if anybody's taken marketing, that's what sells, that's what gets likes and shares and everybody loves. So that's
why I don't do as well on social media.
Exactly. I feel the same. Like I've got too much integrity and we all do. And the problem is integrity doesn't sell.
Yeah. Spencer knows how to push it a little bit.
I try.
That's why he has his memes that are funny. They're not illegitimate, but they push it. I'd get fired if I shared Samuel Jackson saying TikTok.
I mean, to be fair, I have been fired a few times.
for all good reasons.
Okay. All right. So that's Abby's to begin with. Amanda, what about like menopause is a big thing. I mean, so if you look at who tries to do weight loss programs, it tends to be middle-aged women. And I don't say that to be sexist. It's just the data show.
Yeah, even the studies. I mean, oftentimes they're the ones who end up volunteering for the studies that we look
at. Abby actually has a program, just shouting it out. I'm just going to shill for her program, Eating After 40 or something. What is it called? I don't know.
It's Eating After 40. Like our next session starts on Monday. It's for women over 40, and it talks all about nutrition and the psychological aspects, and it's really amazing.
Evidence-based Abby. Let's call her evidence-based Abby. Now, Amanda, though, what are the things that you hear about menopause? I guarantee there's people listening right now. They either are going through, or they know someone going through it. What are the things that you hear? Top three things.
So, I came with notes because I've got so much to say. And you know, I go on these rants and everything. So there's a bunch of stuff, right? So clearly the testing. The testing's one of the things we touched on, the
Dutch testing.
And the, whenever I talk about stuff, I talk about what the medical consensus is, what the North American Menopause Society's current stance is, because I'm like trying to advocate for patients. I'm not trying to be a doctor, but quite clearly that type of testing isn't necessary. And so that boils my piss a little bit. But on top of that, right, we have, you can take the girl out of the Northeast, but you can't take the Northeast out of the girl. Okay, so proprietary supplements, just tagging on to Abby's thing about supplements in general. Well, now we've got menopause supplements. So what the even, right? So I mean, for sure, there's going to be some nutrient gaps in any time of our life, and that's no doubt clear in menopause. But having these proprietary supplements that aren't third-party tested, that we don't know what they do, there's some out there that cost like $400-$500 a month. Like, so they see us coming. And also, if you think about it, midlife women are potentially in a better state of mind, probably, I mean, like, as far as like our financial situation is concerned, like we maybe have a bit more disposable income. And so if we're feeling vulnerable and we don't like something about us, we're maybe wanting to go for a quick fix, and they see us coming. And there's no blame on the women. It's just the way that, like you said, Spencer, this is marketed. And we've already talked about somebody else in this show that at the beginning that like I have had run-ins with too. And the marketing type of things that I see, which is the third thing I was going to talk about, is this like targeting our saggy arms or our big fat apron belly or some bullshit thing that we hate about ourselves, back fat or whatever. And they get us in, they claw us in because we hate ourselves, right? And it drives me crazy. And so there's some of the main things. The last two, though, like is tagging on to the eliminating these separate food groups is menopause diets. Like there isn't one. There isn't one. There's a new book being released.
I'm going to review
on
it.
A menopause diet.
Ooh, yeah. Oh yeah,
Abby's going to review
Galveston
it.
The Galveston diet. Stand back.
Is that the menopause diet? Oh,
it's like Mary Claire Haver, that OBGYN who puts women on keto intermittent fasting diets to get rid of their meno belly.
Low calorie.
That'd probably
and
make people
instead
feel like
of
shit.
Like empowering women saying.
Yeah, and you have to like maintain
it
forever.
And instead of saying to women, this is.
Yeah. Good Lord.
Right. And instead of giving solid nutritional information with a few nuances, maybe increased fiber, protein, but don't we all need that anyway, any times of our lives? And so now we see a lot of keto, intermittent fasting sort of push towards us. And I don't understand why, because we don't have the evidence at all. It's not there, unless you guys know of
it.
I haven't seen
it. I was going to say, you know, there's a common theme with these diets that have to do with hormones. And we've, you know, looked into this, and I certainly obviously try to pay attention a lot. The common theme, you know, thyroid diets, right? We know that there's no evidence of any type of dietary strategy to fix thyroid disease, other than maybe making sure you get selenium and you're not deficient, especially if you have Graves' disease. That's a little bit of a nuance. But what always ends up happening is people improve the generalized quality of their diet, right? They reduce the processed, refined food intake, and they increase their more whole food, you know, maybe we can say plant forward, whatever, doesn't matter. And, you know, do things that changes the energy intake, which could be keto and intermittent fasting, but also, you know, can be lower carb, lower fat, but mostly, you know, reducing the refined processed foods, and everyone does better with that. And so, you know, so those, I think, you know, if you dig into some of the dietary recommendations for, say, menopausal symptoms, and this is, I'm going to ask you something about that too, like what specifically is going on with some of the females that get targeted, because not everyone has problems when they go through menopause. Some have, extreme symptoms like the hot flashes. Some of them, you know, we do have issues with a little bit of weight gain. And certainly from my perspective, we often talk about the hormones, and we can get into that. But in general, the dietary recommendations are usually just improved overall quality, you know, and looking at a personalized dietary pattern to help, maybe mitigate some of the energy excess that's coming in and just improve the quality. And we have, you know, Mediterranean dietary pattern, cutting down refined processed foods, all those things are beneficial. How much strong data to help with menopause.
Well, you see that, you know? It's not even just menopause, but it's all sorts of other things.
Well, that's like I said, with thyroid and like everything.
Rheumatological things and whatever.
Well, and ironically, I think that's, you know, the Dutch testing and these inappropriate hormones that these guys that aren't even endocrinologists like to try to order or tell people to order. And then what do they do with the information? It's not diagnosing endocrine disease. If it does, they end up seeing people like me. What they do is then they don't actually use that information. They just end up sometimes giving fairly reasonable diet and lifestyle, sleep, stress reduction advice. And so really what they should just say is, hey, we're going to give good lifestyle coaching. They don't need to do that stuff, but that's
the money. But then they give them handfuls of supplements too. in order to help lower their cortisol. Right, so they do that too, but
that's money.
Cortisol lowering.
Right, that's money. That's money. And there's zero reason to do that. And by the way, if it did, that's a problem. They're going to end up seeing me again if you take something that cuts down your cortisol, if it really does, if it's a drug. Yeah, so anyway, sorry, I kind of hijacked that.
But that's exactly it though. Like, so why aren't we modeling that? So, and most of us are, but you know, there's always the extremes out there. And I often think the smoke and mirrors with these people as well. You know, they come across as being female empowering, I get you and all of this crap, but underneath they're just offering a 1200 calorie diet with like broccoli
and carrot salad. Just like,
because you need broccoli and carrots to detox your excess estrogen. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a supplement.
DIM. Yeah, oh, for sure.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, yeah, DIM, yeah.
That's what they do.
And then the last one is something that we've just been talking about recently, and it's about the unregulated hormones that are now super easy for women to get. Now, I come from the place where I've seen that women have been refused hormones for long enough because of like the WHI study of 2002. And so they'll go to their doctors who will say, we're not prescribing them. We don't feel comfortable. The doctors don't have the knowledge base to be able to push forward on that. And so women are struggling with symptoms and they can't find a specialist. So I have this, I think you might have called it, Spencer, the Wild West of hormones out there. And it even refers to the diabetes and obesity medicine, right? But I have this crazy story. So there's a company called Winona out there. And I think we talked about one called Choose Joy as well. It's called JOI. Well, this Winona company, people have sent me for ages and ages and ages. And I thought, I wonder what it is. I wonder whether this is like giving me access to a North American Menopause Society doctor that I can speak to, get regulated hormones, because those telemedicine services exist. And I think they're amazing. Because women need to speak to doctors. Well, it's not. You go on. I did the whole process. I thought, I'm going to give it a go. You go online, you put your name, your age, your state in, and then you upload some ID. And I think that was it. And then I have to say what I want, what symptoms I've got. And the symptoms were, I want to look younger. I want to lose weight. Or I want to help with my menopause symptoms. But the end result products were all the same. They were all compounded. Hormones, estrogen, patches, creams, all these different things. There was only one regulated hormone that was issued, and it was the micronized progesterone. Mm-hmm. All of the others were compounded. And so I went onto the chat line, and it was really funny. I went onto the chat line. And I was like, can you tell me why you issue unregulated hormones when all of the medical societies are suggesting that we do regulated hormones? Mm-hmm. And then this is the response we've got. And I've had to say it word for word because I couldn't believe it. So she said, listen, because she thought I was stupid, of course. Listen, for a more simple reference, flour is approved by the FDA and milk is approved by the FDA. But when it's made into a biscuit, it's no longer approved by the FDA. Our hormones are like a biscuit. I hope this reference brightens up your day. I was like, wow. Are you fucking for real? Anyway, and the last part of this story is she didn't realize that, but they'd already emailed me and said, can you recommend Winona to your community and get 20% off?
Oh, wow.
Get 20% commission. Yeah. So
it's almost a pyramid scheme. A little bit, you know, by doing that. Wow. That's interesting.
And that poor biscuit, the poor biscuit got thrown under
the bus. It's amazing.
And,
you know, and just to touch on that from the medical perspective, I don't know how much, Spencer, I don't know how much, you know, menopause therapy you do, but obviously in the endocrine clinic, you know, we do a lot. And so I have to have this discussion with a lot of females because the data have been confusing ever since the Women's Health Initiative. So if you go back to, you know, long before we were ever even in medical school, according to my sources, you know, this is going back before our time, but it seemed like menopausal hormone therapy was very common and almost like everyone got it, right? And then the Women's Health Initiative came out, appeared to show increased cardiovascular and cancer mortality, and everyone stopped. Everybody stopped. Then over the years, by the time I was in medical school and residency and fellowship, all they split the hairs of the study. And that turned into the timing hypothesis, and we have better options. By the way, we have plenty of bioidentical FDA-approved options, and I almost always only use those. So it's kind of ironic. I mean, the bioidentical estradiol patches and micronized progesterone. That's kind of my go-to for some reasons that, you know, we could get into on a menopause podcast. But, you know, but just to kind of point that out, the timing hypothesis, you know, if you're younger, closer to menopause and, you know, don't have any, you know, strong family history of especially like an estrogen sensitive breast cancer, all the benefits probably outweigh the risks if you have the symptoms, first of all. So it's only really indicated for the symptoms. You know, we can debate the indication for osteoporosis prevention, but you do get the bone benefits for sure. You definitely get the hot flash benefits. People do tend to gain less weight and in a better distributed fashion. And there are probably there's probably a trend of cardiovascular and metabolic benefits if you start younger as opposed to later. And so that's that timing hypothesis. And by the way, people who've had a hysterectomy, they only need the estradiol, and it actually seemed to be the progesterone component of the Women's Health Initiative that maybe sort of was connected to the increased breast cancer risk. But even then, some of those the statistics weren't like through the roof concerning for some of those little nuances anyways. It's just, you know, so we still have to personalize therapy, but
the candidates in the study were postmenopausal mm-hmm. women with comorbidities.
Yeah. And so the biggest chunk of them were older, and that's why the study at first was like, whoa, this is bad. And it, 'cause everyone was, the average age was like 65. 10, 15 years past menopause. And that gets into, again, nuances of, you know, atherosclerotic disease with menopause and maybe disturbing that with reintroduction of estrogen and all that stuff. But anyways, that's just a little background into what you're talking about and how I talk to
patients.
But
the idea that you can get your hormones online, obviously we know Lion King was doing it, but you guys in the like obesity world as well.
Yeah, which is a new thing.
Did you call the Liver King the Lion King?
Running out of...
I thought maybe you were talking about the Tiger King. And what's the lady's name on
Carol
Tiger
Baskin.
King?
Carol
Baskin. I thought maybe we were talking about Carol Baskin for a minute. Yeah. So what if Carol Baskin and the
Please
Liver King
leave
got together
that in
though?
The podcast because oh. that's such an Amanda moment. Like I just say
the
shit
Lion
and
King.
Works.
Yeah. All right. And now we're gonna in our share we're gonna tag Liver King and Carol Baskin.
Yeah.
And see if we can get that those two together. See what happens.
Anyway, I'm out of here. You can talk about the obesity meds. But like, I mean, that shocks me too, though, the fact that like you can now buy obesity medicine from
Many spas. From many spas. And then
And that's the bigger problem. And that's what Spencer's combating. Yeah. I just saw somebody shared with me the other day about some person who shared her story. And she said, I have a BMI of 20. I'm very mm-hmm. fit. And I went on one of these online you know, clinics or whatever, med spas, and they just prescribed me Wegovy.
Well, and, not Wegovy. You know, Spencer's trying to have a semaglutide. Probably just.
Well, I don't even know if it was a compounded semaglutide. It was something. Doesn't even matter. It wasn't indicated. It wasn't the right stuff, and it was completely inappropriate. Yeah. And you know, you're trying to build a legitimate online, real virtual health platform, but you got to compete with the quackery. Yeah. That's a problem for everybody.
The good news is, I don't think those people are going – first of all, I think these heavy-hitting lawyers are going to start knocking them down because these are FDA-approved compounds, peptides, that these compounders are finding loopholes to put it into their own vials and sell.
I want to know if they're truly getting it, though. I cannot imagine how they get the molecule that Novo – that they have patented.
That's a great question.
In Denmark. But I honestly got – how the heck could anybody get it?
Because –
So that I would not take it. And people don't
somebody's
understand.
Somebody's synthesizing it.
I guess, but
they're getting the molecular formula.
And for people out there, I mean, Amanda and Abby, you guys sent us that you dug in and got some response from the FDA on this whole compounding thing. Yeah. And I've been interviewed by, was it the Wall Street Journal or something, where they were investigating how this was all going on. I thought that was a pretty good response you found.
Yeah, it was great. So it was one of my followers who used to work for the FDA. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how is this allowed? How are these people allowed to sell hormones without any sort of repercussions? Because if someone from the general population was desperate and wanted help, they would feel like this was authentic. How would they know the difference between that and yours, Spencer? Like, how would they? They don't. They don't often have the knowledge base to be able to do that. So, yeah, understanding the loopholes it literally is a minefield. It sounded to me literally as though the FDA don't have the resources to be able to keep on top of this.
Part of
that
it,
was
that
like
is
my,
it, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why we do, I mean, that's why you all post about, you know, these red flags of quackery. Abby does her blogs about reviews on certain diets. And it's hard because just yesterday I saw something from the carnivore MD, Paul Saladino, talking about how, what's the difference between Coke Zero and Diet Coke? And he's like, it doesn't matter. They're both horrible for weight loss. They mess with insulin signaling and they cause weight gain. And then he showed some weird mechanism and then it's got like a million views. And I'm like, well,
and it's like some animal study, probably.
How do I do my how do I share my counterpoint that I published last year to him and somehow?
No, he doesn't care. He cares about his mind.
I know, but if other people could see,
they don't care. They don't get. I think people following him. I feel bad for the people following him because they fall for the marketing lies and whatever. So, but this is what we're.
Hopefully, they don't start drinking regular Coke.
Yeah, this is what we're combating. I mean, sure, if they want to drink water, it's fine. But like, it's more of the vilifying, as Abby mentioned.
Do you guys, as doctors, ever wonder what happens, where the tipping point is for these doctors that, you know, like, I mean, think about it.
Yes,
we used to have like our other generation, like our parents' generation had this respect for the doctors, right? That was like a non-questioning respect. And now like you even can see it happening. You can see some doctors like going towards the edge and you're just like, oh no, there they go.
Well, you know, the concept of the snake oil salesman, that's been around for a long time. I think that somebody showed me something that I shared somewhat recently about an old black and white commercial way back talking about beware of the snake oil salesman. Yeah. And it was exactly what we always talk about. And it was like from the 50s or something. Yeah.
They've been around remarkable. For hundreds of years. These people have come around.
Yeah, but do you think maybe social media giving them the glorification that they want?
It's made it worse, of course. And it causes the death of the expert, right? So nobody wants to hear the mainstream evidence-based boring expertise. They want the crazy. And unfortunately, it's like Spencer's favorite scene from The Simpsons.
Dingers.
Yeah, because he said, do you want me to
tell you the truth about the MLB, or do you want me to? Mark McGuire. It was Mark McGuire.
Mark McGuire, who the home run king from back
in the
day.
Or do you want the secrets of the MLB? Or do you want me to see me hit some dingers? And everybody goes, dingers, because nobody.
Dingers.
Yeah. It's.
Nobody cares.
So, it's interesting to watch some of these people go off the deep end. You know, Paul Saladino specifically, he did psychiatry. And what's interesting, he's marketed himself as a as kind of like this metabolic health guy, but psychiatry, if anybody understands,
he's a psychiatrist.
Psychiatry doesn't, they don't even touch patients. Yeah. They don't even listen to patients' heart. They don't do anything. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing to see there.
But you know, these people are selling a lie, and they're also selling a distrust in the conventional medical system. The way they do it is that they're like, the conventional medical system won't help you. It's only for big pharma. Mm-hmm. They're getting paid. You know, doctors don't have your best interest at heart, but I do. You know, meanwhile, these guys are getting paid like a lot, and none of us are getting paid by big pharma or whatever it is. And it's I've never seen
very ironic,
like so much distrust in the FDA and you know, the powers that be, whatever. It's just so divisive and harmful.
It got worse because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
The pandemic killed it. So much distrust because there's so much unknown. Like, hey, we don't know how this
became political,
how this is spreaded. You know, wash your hands. Yeah. Oh wait, no, it's aerosolized. Now you got to wear
a mask. And that's normal. Oh, like, it's a novel virus. Right.
Sometimes we got
to
learn.
Yeah, you have to learn. But people were like, I thought the vaccine's super effective.
Best we can. Yeah, with the evidence.
Well, it's kind of effective. You know, whatever. That's what everybody. That's what. No, listen to me.
And they're like, oh, they keep changing their minds.
That's how you learn.
We do change the guidance as the data comes in. And if you have a strong stance and you don't change, that's a problem.
I yelled at the TV so much.
We've certainly changed over the years
with the people like that because they're like, they just keep changing their mind. Yes, that's how it works, people.
You know, I do want to say one thing about the compounding. So I want to make sure people don't think we're just like completely anti-compounding medications because, you know, one thing that they did note in that response to you, your friend from the FDA, one of the reasons they allow that to happen is because sometimes there are very specific little dosing desires or whatnot that physicians do want to be able to create for some people that aren't actually available in FDA approved medications. I really, honestly, I have never come across that situation, but there are those situations out there, and so it. There can
be. Carl, have you ever seen the report? I think I'm saying it right. The National Association of Science Engineers and Medicine, all about compounding hormones. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the reason they did an independent study because it just mm-hmm. started getting out of control, and essentially they were like saying compounding pharmacies have a valid place mm-hmm. in medicine, but it's for it's fewer rather than the majority. But what's happened is. And so at the end, the conclusion of that report was basically like we have insufficient evidence to mm-hmm. confirm the efficacy and safety of compounding and the lack of literature within the medications that they give you. There's obviously no black box warnings and stuff like that. And so it's really great because when people complain about the FDA like rooting against the mm-hmm. compounding pharmacies, this report was an independent one where they spoke with compounding pharmacists. They spoke with all of the different medical organizations and they came up with this independent stance. And so if anybody is like curious about that, I would definitely check that one out.
Yeah, that's a good link. And there have been several professional organizations to put out statements. Like you said, the North American Menopause, I think, did. You know, I know maybe the Endocrine Society. I know ACE.
They do. And
did.
ACOG did as well. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like they're getting paid by the FDA to do so. I mean, it's just clinicians going over the evidence and coming up with best recommendations for people.
Oh, you don't think we know you are all in each other's pockets. You're all going out for dinner and drinks together. That's what the type of thing people say, right?
And don't get me wrong. I don't mind going to dinners and stuff for education, but in the state.
Talking about big meat.
Big egg.
Big meat. I told a patient today, you know, I always
talk
about.
Talking about big meat. Are we going down to the GSM?
Oh boy, here we go.
Stuff. No, yeah. Oh, we go.
I always joke around about being a shill for Mr. Peanut because I'm such a big fan of like nuts and seeds and the health benefits of them, you know, and legumes. And so I was telling this patient, I was talking about Graves' disease and selenium. And I was like, you know, I always try to tell people to get Brazil nuts. And I'm like, you know, I always say I'm a kind of a shill for Mr. Peanut, but they haven't paid me yet. Not yet. So Mr. Peanut, if you're out there. I'll be
a
shill
for
you.
Good enough job, yeah. But you know, like just in general, though, like I never thought that. I don't know about you, Abby. When you started, I mean, I got into doing the training and nutritional coaching and stuff because I really wanted to just like help women, particularly. I mean, I have male clients as well, but just to feel good and healthy and capable and like improve their health and all of those things. I never thought I'd be that person going, "For fuck's sake, not another one."
It's I knew I was going to be
that person.
Like
playing whack-a-mole every day.
That's why I got into. Yeah. I was a dietitian in a primary care clinic before. I did this and then I thought I got to do something. So that's when I started my business and started writing because it was just getting to be so bad. And it was in 2012. It was better than it is now. Now it's the worst. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much misinformation and people are just doubling down on it and mm-hmm. they just don't give a shit at all.
It's tiring.
That's kind of when we got started doing it too.
Well, do you know, I report people. I report them to
good. Good. Maybe you should make like that an easier way to do that for people because there's a lot.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting.
Yeah. You know, and then you're right. Then we end up seeing patients and you don't, the problem is if you just tell them, oh my God, those people are crazy and you just got screwed. That comes across very negatively and then they feel bad or they're offended. I mean, I just had a guy yesterday who was referred for probably very legitimate hyperparathyroidism. And he's got a history of kidney stones. But somehow this all came out, you know, he was seeing one of our kind of crazy functional medicine clinics in the bigger city nearby. He was seeing an acupuncturist who was they were telling him all sorts of crazy stuff that now he's got 250 food allergies.
Oh, no.
And yet he doesn't go see an allergist and an immunologist. And I'm just kind of like, okay, well, you know, that's whatever, you know, and I try to focus on what we're focusing on. And he may have a lot of his issues from this hyperparathyroidism, which I think he has. But it's just, it's unfortunate he's gone down this rabbit hole. And I don't know if those things have anything to do with it.
He probably spent so much money on it.
Yeah, and the sides are slippery.
Yeah.
Once people are in there.
Right. But I try to, you know, I try to be supportive and, you know, just say, hey, you got to take those things with a grain of salt, you know, whatever. And whatever.
That's the right way to be and be compassionate because the onus should never be on the patient.
Right, because they're the ones,
and the thing is,
they're like the victims,
they are the
really.
Victims. Yeah,
I think so.
In fact, they absolutely
they cannot be like counted on, or you can't trust people to understand scientific literature or guidelines. I mean, that's the practitioner. The onus is on the practitioner to be straight with people, and it just does not happen.
And unfortunately, we don't have a great healthcare system. It does screw people over, and people feel they feel like they've been screwed over, and so then they seek out these, you know, the alternatives who do the divide and conquer thing and say, see, mainstream medicine doesn't help. And it's not that the doctors and the science aren't there. It's the way it's our system is. I have an issue with big insurance. Yeah. Speaking if we're going to target any big anything, I have an issue with insurance companies and how they pay us, and we don't have enough time to spend with people. We don't have enough of us now. It pushes people like Spencer, who's a great family practice doctor. I wish everyone was like him, into, you know, really doing, being more of a specialist and, you know, focusing on obesity and lipids, when we need more primary care doctors like, you know, like him. And it's, they make it, the system makes it miserable, which makes it miserable for the patients. And so, unfortunately, you know, we do the best we can, and hopefully.
Yeah. And we've got three healthcare systems we're talking about, because I've been involved in the NHS one, obviously, in the UK, and we're both in Canada now. There's faults to them all, right? And there's pros to them all as well, of course.
Yeah. And yeah, right. And I have not heard anything perfect about any, you know, country nationalized versus
Sweden. I
don't know.
This summer.
Really?
Perfect. Perfect. Oh my God. My son went and he forgot his medication. We went to see an emergency doctor. We were in and out with a prescription in our hand within 10 minutes, and it cost us about 20 euros. And it was just so sleek and efficient. And anyway, yeah.
Do you know how, I mean, yeah, I know we probably need to have a different podcast on that.
I don't know how it worked, but I was impressed. Because
it gets beyond, it gets beyond my comprehension. But then you always wonder, like, well, how do they do with big chronic health?
Oh, they're great.
Prevention, chronic probably care. Amazing.
On a population level, I guarantee that. But on an individual, it's the individuals that you'll hear that don't have a good experience. But then on a population level, they do great. Their public health is good. Anyway.
Remember when Tom Green was like, Swedish. My bubble's under the lips. That one, remember that?
Tom Green, oh my God.
Amanda's like, what the hell are you talking about?
What, is this like an American reference or something? Is it
Tom Green?
Look up Tom Green.
My bum is Tom under Green whatever.
From the early 2000s.
No, I'm going to go Google that after this podcast for sure.
Yep.
I might be careful what comes up though.
No,
my bum is on your lips. Well, I don't think I want to put that in
Google.
Find
the picture of, you might find a picture of Dr. Carl Rose.
Oh my God.
So all right. Well, Tom, I think Green. I think we pretty much hit everything. We'll probably have y'all back on the podcast at some point to go over whatever else, but
maybe hot topics too. So, you know, and obviously you guys talk to us.
We'll
a
be
lot.
Going on your podcast soon.
Yes, as things maybe come up, maybe we can talk about specific things.
Sorry, and you know what I loved about this is that we all come from this from a different place as well, and I love that we meet in the middle, because like it's just I think what we need, right? And I think that's one of the blessings of social media, don't you? Because there's a lot of crappiness out there, but now and again you go, this is good. Because I'm like, oh, let me just go ask my doctor friends.
There are definitely some pros about the social media connecting, you know, clinicians, healthcare professionals, scientists, and stuff like that. I mean, absolutely. They're goods to go to balance.
Very
out
good. Thank you both for coming on, and we'll be publishing this soon. We'll
Thank
come
you
on
for
to
having
your
us.
Podcast very soon. Thank here's
yeah,
our.
Yeah, you have to come on to mine too.
Yes.
We, of course.
We'll make it a.
Absolutely.
We'll make it a,
yeah,
we'll
definitely.
Make it a thing. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.